No one likes to imagine being in a hospital, gravely ill and unable to communicate. But it's even worse to imagine yourself in that situation if your loved ones don't know your wishes. I'm Annie Feit. Healthcare workers recommend everyone over the age of 18 sign an advance directive and appoint a healthcare agent, someone to speak on your behalf if you can't. Advance directives are our topic today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
According to one study, 90% of people say talking about end-of-life care with their loved ones is important, but only 20% have actually had that conversation. It's not an easy conversation to have, but it's critically important for yourself and the people you love. And it's not just for older folks or people diagnosed with a terminal illness. Anyone over 18 can sign an advance health directive, and they should, according to my guest today on Talk of Alaska. If you want to join the conversation, the call-in number is 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. If you're calling from Anchorage, please dial 550-8422. You can also email a question or comment to talk@alaskapublic.org. And my guests today are Chris Green. She's an advanced care planning coordinator at Providence Health Services. Hi, Chris.
Good morning.
Gigi Rigg is a medical social worker at Alaska Innovative Medicine.
Hi.
And Julie Wrigley is an attorney with Durrell Law Group in Anchorage.
Good morning.
And Chris, why don't you start with the basics? What is an advance directive?
Thanks. That's a great question. Advance directive is an actual document, but what we're talking about or what I'd like to propose is that advance care planning is a process and it's the full conversation. It's having the opportunity to share your personal values, your wishes with those that you love, and then most importantly, to put that into writing. And when you put that into writing, an advance directive means identifying who you want to speak for you if you are not able to, and what to do in the event that you can't talk to your provider and tell them what you'd like to do and how you would proceed. So it's sort of a two-part, the actual advance directive, but the process is having the conversation.
And Julie, as a lawyer, how important is that document?
It's a very, very important document. It's the only written evidence of your wishes regarding your health care in the event you're unable to advocate or speak for yourself. So memorializing it in a written form is really valuable.
And Gigi, can you kind of describe how you became passionate about this and what you saw, you know, in your work that made you want to just make this your mission?
Sure. I've worked many years at an acute hospital, and seeing people come in with a crisis and having the family have to have conversations among themselves about what would our loved one want, what would mom want, what would dad want. And it really takes them away from that moment of being present and being at their loved one's side and feeling in confidence they can speak on behalf of their loved one that's lost their voice for whatever reason. And so to see people distracted in the moment where they really needed to be at the bedside holding hands, reminiscing, telling stories, it pulled away from the importance of being in the hospital and having the crisis. So if the advance directive was there, that decision was made, and that person's voice was loud and clear, regardless of what their healthcare condition was.
And Julie, what is a healthcare agent?
A healthcare agent is the person that's been asked to, nominated by the patient, asked to act on behalf of the patient in a formal manner in this, to make the decisions on behalf of the person who can't speak for themselves. They're not the guardian. That's a different legal role, but they are the person appointed by some sort of legal means to act on behalf of that person.
Gigi, you want?
Can I add a little something? When I talk to people about what the agent is, I really say this is the person that will use your voice when you don't have one. And so what's very important is to differentiate with the agent is you have to leave your beliefs and your thoughts aside, and whatever that person that has named you as the agent asks you to do, you use their voice at the table. And so that important part of the agent taking on the responsibility of saying, I can put my values aside and my healthcare wishes, and I will be your voice when I talk on your behalf when you can't.
And Chris, this is why you're talking about the conversation is so important, because you can't just appoint an agent and not tell them, right?
Exactly. There have been many agents who have been surprised and are suddenly in a position of speaking for someone, and they did not know that they had been identified by their parent to be their spokesperson. And so, yeah, it's those values that the person really wants to project in the written document, but then have the conversation with not just the healthcare agent, but also the other loved ones, so that it's a consistent message and, as Gigi said, not a distraction where people begin arguing to continue a certain type of treatment or intervention when this is something that the patient themselves really would not have wanted.
And who should be that healthcare agent? Julie, you know?
Sure. Who should be that person should be someone that you trust the most. I have a little list that I share with my clients. At least the list is in my head. And it includes trustworthiness. That person has to be able to take on the role of putting themselves in your position. I think all three of us agree on that. They need to be able to put their own beliefs aside, and you need to trust them to do that. You need to trust that they will think about what your wishes are in a healthcare situation, which may or may not directly correlate with their own. And that's a tough role, but that's probably, in my mind, the most important thing. Mm-hmm. If you don't trust them, they shouldn't be in that role.
And I think part of selecting an agent is where the conversation becomes important. I have been a part of conversations where the spouse is not necessarily the right agent for that person, that the spouse says, there is no way I will be able to tell a doctor not to provide all intervention to continue you on that life support, whether you want it or not. And so that spouse then chooses a friend that can be a more neutral role, that could take on the position of the wife's voice, so that the husband, if it were that scenario, could again just be present, hold the hand, and know his wife is being represented by a friend. But without that pre-conversation, that becomes a very difficult situation. But
so, yeah, does the spouse feel left out in that situation, or like, hey, I should be this person?
Without the conversation, yes. But when the conversation happens beforehand, and at the time, if we're using husband-wife, at the time the wife is able to say to the husband, because I love you, because this is not a strength that you will have at that point. Your strength is to be by my side, and your strength is to give me your love and support, and I want 100% of that focused on me. Let's have the agent be this person. And so they're all on the same page before that moment comes, whether it's a month or 10 years or whatever that looks like. It's not a surprise.
And what about the case of an older parent and they have 5 kids? How do they decide, you know, what kid to appoint?
I have that conversation a lot with clients you know, the spouse, who should I pick? Which child should I pick? We do, in my job, I'm an estate planner, and we do a lot of different documents. And so sometimes parents rotate the jobs among the children. Sometimes it's pretty obvious to them which child is the best equipped to make those tough decisions, or the child who can build consensus among the other children. So it's sort of intuitive. I think when people take a minute and think about who it would be best able to speak for them, it sort of naturally evolves. But that's the most important thing, is taking that minute to think about it and then sharing your personal desires and wishes with your loved ones.
Okay, and if you want to join the conversation, you can give us a call. Have you signed an advance directive? Are you thinking of signing one and have a question? Call 1-800-478-8255 or 1-800-478-TALK. If you're calling from Anchorage, it's 550-8422. Or to email a question or comment, it's talk@alaskapublic.org. And Julie, why don't you talk about, what if you don't have an advance directive and you're in a medical crisis, what happens from a legal standpoint? Why do you need one?
Well, you need one because the healthcare providers are naturally looking for someone to make those decisions when you're incapacitated. I guess I'd like to take this minute to remind everyone that we're talking about these documents are effective when you're unable to advocate or speak for yourself. We use in the statute the word capacity, and the word capacity is kind of a legally charged word in the sense that there are different definitions based on which statute you're looking at. But in this case, we're referring to the ability to process the situation, the healthcare situation you're in, and the ability to make a decision regarding your own healthcare. So when, oh my gosh, I just lost my train of thought.
That happens on the radio.
Yeah. So
what happens medically? Why do you need one?
So when you're in the healthcare situation and there's a crisis going on and you're unable to speak for yourself, the providers, I always say doctors, but I mean providers, because really it's a healthcare team that's taking care of you. They're looking for someone to ask that question. Can we do this surgery? Who's going to sign the consent form? So naturally, there are some situations where there isn't a minute to ask for that consent, but they will be looking for who to talk to. And they generally look for the next of kin is the word, the phrase that I use. And that could be a parent. So imagine this scenario. You're a young person, 26-year-old, 28-year-old, 18-year-old, and you have not executed one of these, but you have this, you have a relationship, you have a partner with someone someone whom you've had a long-term relationship with that maybe you live with, and you wouldn't maybe call your mom and say, hey, mom, I'm thinking about having this surgery, or, it's an emergency situation, and the person who knows your wishes best is your partner, not your mom, who lives in Wisconsin and you're in Alaska. So this form would allow the physician to ask your partner for consent if you've made them your agent. Not otherwise, they'd be calling your parents, because just in the legal, consanguinity, tables of consanguinity, sort of next of kin, that's who's on the who's up to bat. It's not your mom. You don't want your mom. You maybe want your partner, and that could be a domestic partner or a spouse. But spouse is a legal relationship. That's a statutory relationship, so that gets you right in the door. But I think of this as a nice document to bring authority to other places.
And within the hospital, I think that this form really clears up a lot of that investigation time. When you're in a crisis and someone comes in incapacitated, and looking at Alaska state statute, who is legal next of kin, and the order of that, and finding the order, it takes time. And again, it takes time away from being present and talking to the doctor about the specific situation or what the crisis is and what the interventions are. And instead, people are running around trying to find out who is the consent giver.
Yeah, and Chris, do you or maybe somebody else wants to address this? What are we talking about when you're, you know, incompacitated? What are some of the situations that
there's a whole continuum of things, but for the older person or somebody with a very chronic illness or life-limiting illness, it may mean things like CPR. It may mean intubation, which is a breathing tube that goes down your throat. Those are probably the bigger ones. Oftentimes people talk about being hooked up to a machine when I'm a vegetable. Don't do that. And so it's defining exactly what that means and what that looks like in med speak. So helping people through that process.
You know, and I think that one of the definitions for incapacity that gets confused in a hospital setting is incompetency. And so I talk to people about the difference, and incapacity can be a temporary state because of a medical condition, and incompetency is a legal determination stated by a judge in a court. And so that incapacity that gets so big and uncomfortable can really be a short-term moment where the person doesn't have their voice.
And so the person, your agent, could be speaking for you for just a quick amount of time. We're not talking about necessarily a days long.
Well, for as long as that time that you're unable to advocate for yourself, who's your advocate?
Okay. And we do have a caller, Heather, in Anchorage. Hello.
Hi, and hi, Chris.
Good morning.
Just wanted to share a couple of things for those of you in this planning mode. My own experience and experience with most of the people that I've dealt with, many people, is folks, particularly as they get older, they want to stay in their own home, they want to manage their own money, and they want to drive. And I think most of us are probably going to have to give up one or more of those over time. And what I have found with advanced planning, and that's an interesting word, I don't quite use it that way, but it's a communication tool to talk to the people that you love. And it may be a spouse, but it may be children, it may be a friend, but it's hard to talk about those things, and the communication is so fraught, at least in some families. And there's one of the things that I have used occasionally is there's a website, and a person, his name is Barry something, I can't remember, called Ethical Wills, and I think it's ethicalwills.org, but I'm not sure. And it's a wonderful way to help people write down or think about or talk about their values. And then out of their values comes a plan that they can make for their own needs and desires as they age or as they are ill. So I just wanted to pass those little hints along.
And Heather, was it a difficult conversation in your case?
It isn't difficult for me. My kids absolutely know if they put me on anything artificial, I'll come back and haunt them. But it was very difficult with my grandparents, my parents, my sister. You know, I've been through this with a great number of family members and friends. And increasingly, people are waking up to this. But I think the resistance is, one, nobody likes to talk about death. That's sort of a bad subject. And it's awkward because it brings in family relationships that may be love relationships, maybe financial relationships, you know, all of the things that make families as complex as they are. So I'm glad there are people like you out there helping, talking about it, encouraging other people to talk about it, because it's a communication that is difficult.
Okay, thanks a lot, Heather, for your call.
You bet.
And yeah, Chris.
I would like to add that there are many, many, many websites that are now available out there in that work, have tools that you can have the conversation. And one of the best, or my most favorite, is the Conversation Project from the Institute for Healthcare Initiatives. And that, along with something like Five Wishes, a document that helps to clarify values, gets you initiated into that process. And through the generosity of the Providence Health Foundation, my particular position is going to be starting workshops statewide in how to begin having these conversations with those that are in your inner circle, as well as expand it once you have your advanced directive written, and then make sure that it goes beyond the healthcare agent that you identify. So
it'll kind of be like Alaska's Conversation Project?
Alaska's Conversation Project, exactly.
And something, Heather, thank you so much for your comments, because really what you've given your family is an amazing gift wrapped in a beautiful bow. That I say this to families all the time as somebody's struggling through this difficult topic, that you're really giving a gift, and your voice will be there with ease as you're unable to use it. And the other thing, Heather, you said is that to make this form out of your values. And often what happens is values start to shift depending on the person's ailment or the intervention being offered, which can feel backwards in the healthcare system, where I think we should base what interventions we're getting because of our values and because of our quality of life wishes, and instead what tends to happen is we adjust our quality of life and we adjust our values depending on the interventions being offered. And so I think that's something to really think about and have a sense. So Heather, thank you for bringing that up to the table.
Exactly, as well, that this is indeed a conversation about end-of-life issues, but it's really, as Gigi has talked about, how to live well every single day, because this can happen at any time in anyone's life.
Yes. And we have another caller, Jennifer in Fairbanks. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. My husband and I have redone our wills and our medical directives and power of attorneys at various stages of our lives. And the last time we did it was when we realized that both of our kids were over the age of 18 and the guardianship section needed to be changed and stuff like that. And I said, with the kids being over 18, they each need their own, power of attorney, and they need their own medical directive. So while they're home from school and home for a visit, why don't we do it all together? So what we did was we got the document offline, it's a 13-page document or something from the state of Alaska, and it's where you can kind of use it as a worksheet, and everybody did their own, and we provided it to our lawyer, and then they drew up the documents, and we went in, and all four of us were on one side of the table, and the lawyer was on the other side, and we went through everybody's medical directives together, and if there were any questions, we could clarify what things meant, and I said to the lawyer, have you ever done this before with the whole family? And he said, no, but I think it's pretty cool. And, what I think was really beneficial out of that, or hope it would be beneficial, is that periodically, we could say, do you remember when we did that? Are there any changes? Do you think we need to look at it? You need to look at yours again, now that you're getting married or whatever. And, it's only been about 4 years, but, I even said to them, and this is Will's stuff, I said, right now you don't have anything, but there are things that are important between you and your friends, maybe projects you've worked on together that I wouldn't realize were important and you might want to have go to them, but things like pain management, psychiatric medications, what to do when someone's pregnant and is unconscious, and you know, someone needs to make decisions, all of those things we discussed as a family, and it was, I thought it was really beneficial.
And Jennifer, what did your kids think when you first brought up the topic when they were relatively young, right?
Well, one was 20 and the other was 23, and I said, you know, while you're home, this is something we're going to do. It's stuff that you need to know about us, and, you know, you need to plan, you know, for your own future and think about, you know, who you trust to make these decisions for you. And you know, then we all went and we got a nice family and individual pictures together and went out to dinner. So it was kind of like a young adult, a grown-up thing to do.
Yeah.
And I think it helped them realize, gee, I'm an adult now, and I've got to think about things like this as well as, you know, whether or not I'm going to get a car.
Honestly, that's Bravo. Just a beautiful coming-of-age tradition that if really all families would adopt that or have these conversations, Jennifer, that's just beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
It may make it easier for them, you know, as Absolutely. We get older, to say, remember those documents we pulled up, you know, should we look at them again?
Yeah.
It's not a forbidden topic. They know that we're willing to talk about it.
Okay, thanks, Jennifer. And Julie, is that something that you see at all?
I've never seen that. She sounds like my dream client. I guess not never. I shouldn't say never, but certainly people, I have had clients who have been able to have that conversation with their families, and I applaud that. I think that's the most important part. I often say, like Chris and Gigi have already said, but this document's best use, this Alaska statute, its best use is as a tool, as a guide to talk over these particular issues with your family members, because when push comes to shove, this is a reference, it's a guide in a medical situation, and it is legally enforceable when executed correctly, but in its best use, it provides that gift of knowledge, the gift of guidance to those people making the difficult decisions.
Okay, and Mary is calling from Anchorage. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I come to the table from different angles. One, I'm the president of the Board of Hospice of Anchorage. I'm also a PhD candidate in palliative care. But I come to this with a direct experience that happened actually just 2 weeks ago. I was returning back from a wonderful trip in Europe, and that evening I ended up with a very rare medication reaction, and I ended up in ICU for 4 days on a ventilator feeding tube. And my best friend was there, and my daughter was there. Fortunately, with my daughter, she's very used to me talking about death and dying, and we've had many discussions, probably to the point where she was just downright bored of those discussions. But as it turned out, because she was next of kin, she was the one that was getting the questions. Will she accept blood transfusions? Does she want this type of treatment? And when last week, when I was kind of getting back into Earth here, I, you know, talked to her about what was that experience, and she said that she just knew. She knew almost backwards and forwards what my wishes would have been, and that she clearly said that if I was on the vent for more than 5 days, that they would have to have more of a discussion about keeping me on that vent. I think the other thing that, for me, I'm so used to dealing with the issues around serious terminal illnesses, that it was a bit of a humbling experience or eye-opening experience to have an acute illness that put me into respiratory failure that I would have, I had no control over. I couldn't have predicted it, and I was in ICU. So it actually is making me, I'm going to actually go back and tweak my advanced directive and now understanding that a random experience can suddenly put you into that position, and that, you know, I wanted no artificial nutrition. Well, now I know that having artificial nutrition with a ventilator for a period of time is something that I would want. And I just really encourage people to talk about with their family members. And young kids are fine. They know what dying is, and they, I'm glad that my daughter, who's only 21, was able to really step up and feel confident, perhaps definitely not comfortable, but she felt confident in making those decisions.
Okay, thanks a lot for your call, Mary. We need to take a quick break here, but we'll continue the conversation as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quitline can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message is sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
You're listening to Talk of Alaska. I'm Annie Feit, and we're discussing advanced directives. If you want to join the conversation, call 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. If you're calling from Anchorage, that's 550-8422, or email talk@alaskapublic.org. My guests are Gigi Rigg from Alaska Innovative Medicine, Julie Wrigley from the Durrell Law Group, and Chris Green from Providence Healthcare Services, Advanced Care Planning. And we had a call right before the break that I didn't give you guys a chance to respond to. So, Gigi, do you want to take the question? Because she brought up the idea of artificial nutrition and hydration. I think that's a point when you're looking at least when I was looking at an advanced directive, I got really confused about.
Sure. Sure, because I get this question a lot that people feel like if they mark they don't want artificial nutrition, then they will never get it. And the important part of this form to remember is it's when a physician or two, and oftentimes five, have deemed that your condition is permanently unconscious or terminal. So if a doctor feels like it's reasonable care to give you nutrition and it's reversible, whatever your ailment is, they will do that. It's their ethical duty. But if the condition is permanently disabled or unconscious, permanently unconscious, or terminal, that's when this form comes into play as far as those life, you know, quality of life and end of life decisions.
Okay. And Julie, did you want to add to that?
Well, it's funny. Two things came to mind. I think I'll add the first one, which is put this document in a little bit of context. I think it's helpful to remember where this document has its origin, which is people might remember the Terry Schiavo case back in Florida some years ago, where there was a lady who was married and she was in a permanent vegetative state. And the conflict that resulted was between her parents and her husband. And over the years, there was no guidance from her. So this kind of couples into the second thought I had, which is I'd like to point out that this document is a helpful document no matter your age range. You can be 18, you can be 30, you can be... Accidents happen in our active community. We are an active community, and we find ourselves in situations that we don't anticipate regularly. And those can result in healthcare crises where someone needs to make decisions when we are temporarily incapacitated. And so, anyway, that's my two cents.
And to piggyback on that, what's very sad is when someone's 19, 20-year-old child has had a traumatic accident and is unable to speak for themselves. within the safety bubble of a hospital, referring to the state statute that you talked about, they have capacity, the parent has capacity to answer and talk on the child's behalf. But once you get outside of the hospital, they can't apply for any type of disability. They can't talk to the person's employer without a power of attorney. Or what I had to do, unfortunately, because the power of attorney didn't exist, is send these parents to the court system to file for guardianship. And in the midst of this crisis, to give a big packet of guardianship and go get a court date, it's again a distraction and takes the parent away from just being able to grieve and be present and give hope to their child in the hospital.
So, yeah, this is a good point then to talk about what is the difference between power of attorney and a healthcare agent?
So there are a couple documents that are useful. We call them, in my practice, lifetime planning documents. And this healthcare, advanced healthcare directive is one of them. And that the purpose of this is obviously, as we've been discussing, to give guidance regarding healthcare decisions and, most importantly, to appoint a person and some alternates, hopefully, to make decisions in healthcare situations. The other document, or one of the other documents we use, is called a power of attorney, or preferably a durable power of attorney. And this document is there to, again, appoint someone to speak for you, act on your behalf regarding business type transactions. And there's a list on this particular document that's quite long that gives this person a lot of room to make banking and mortgage decisions, all sorts of things on your behalf that are typically thought of or categorized as business decisions.
And that would only come into effect if you can't make.
Well, so that's that trigger is slightly different. They have both of these documents, both the Alaska Healthcare Directive and the state's the statutory power of attorney document, have the same trigger paragraph, or it's very similar, and you actively mark on both of these, in these paragraphs, whether you would like them to what you would like to empower the person, the agent, immediately, or you are waiting for a someone to acknowledge that there is lack of capacity.
Okay.
So it just depends.
Okay. And we have another legal question that came in on email. Tom in Fairbanks asks, is the designated agent protected from liability? Can they be successfully sued by relatives or the person who designated them but survives and isn't happy with what they did?
There is a statute. Thank you, Tom, for asking that question.
Good, good
it
question.
Makes the fact that I reviewed the statute again this morning even more valuable. They are protected. That person has a statutory protection from doing the immunities, I think is the name of the. Yes. Well, then. But anyway, yes, they are protected.
Yeah, okay.
They are immune.
We do have another call. Beverly in Craig. Hello. You're on Talk of Alaska.
Good morning, and good day from beautiful downtown sunny Craig on Prince of Wales Island.
That sounds good.
I've just thoroughly enjoyed listening to the conversations because so many valid points have been made, including the last question, and also I learned a lot from Mary's experience and got reminded about it's a good idea to update or tweak our advanced directives. I've worked with the low-income elderly population on our very rural island in southern southeast Alaska for 11 years, both through the state Medicaid waiver program, and my most recent exposure was doing service coordination and advocacy through Catholic Community Services in a federal grant that we partnered with a Quinkett and Haida Housing Authority. And that gave me an opportunity for the last 7 years to actually have an office in the low-income building where the elders lived. So I gained a new insight being where they lived versus visiting them for a mandatory home visit once a month and talking once a while on the phone. So this has always been a difficult conversation for a lot of us and for our elders particularly, who are coming from a different time and can be intimidated sometimes by the legal ease that our forms present. And when I came across the five wishes, and that was in an Indian country health teleconference that I sat in on, and I was introduced to the five wishes, I gained access to those, to that document. And it made the process very easy and approachable to talk with the elders about, because it kept things simple. And it's also legal. And I know that our local clinics, the Peace Health Clinics in Ketchikan and other areas out here on Prince of Wales, use the Five Wishes documents, and some of the hospices do, because it's a little bit more informal, but it answers the same questions, but it asks them in a little bit easier way. So I just wanted to add that to the discussion, because I'm now at a point where even I, after working in this maze of helping elders through the bureaucracy for the last 11 years, can be intimidated sometimes by the legalese and the documents involved. But they're so, so worthwhile to get done. I had personal experience with my own mother, who took care of us kids by putting her advanced directives together and doing a living will and also a living trust. And it made her transition so much easier on us children. And everybody knew what she wanted us to do, how she wanted us to do it, when she wanted us to do it, and nobody got in a big fight over anything at the end.
Okay, thanks, Beverly, for that story. And Chris, do you want to just, you touched on the five wishes earlier in the program, but yeah, there are two like main documents that are recognized in Alaska. One is Five Wishes, the other is...
is off the Department of Health and Social Services website. It's just the advanced directive form. You find it on Department of Public Health website, called advanced directives. So those are the two most commonly recognized ones, but other systems have advanced directives, like the Native Medical Center is creating their own document that they will use internally that's culturally sensitive, and considering those sorts of things, working collaboratively with them, because my project is a statewide effort. Five Wishes is another document you can get online. You have to pay for that particular one, but it is a document that is recognized in the state of Alaska. The VA has their own form, all of which are effective documents and legal documents used within the system. And that actually it is recognized that if, correct me if I'm wrong, but you can write on a napkin what you want, and it doesn't follow the exact same legal channel, but it certainly gives information about what it is that you want that gives some preference, and that too is a gift.
If it's notarized too, that helps. Yes. Notarized napkin?
Witnessed or witnessed. Well, there are certain qualifications for the witnesses.
Or the napkin.
But, the napkin doesn't have to be from a particular Alaska bar, but it does have to be written down, because that it doesn't have to be, I should say. The statute says it can be oral, but that's really tough to hand over an oral agreement. So I would recommend that everyone write down on a napkin or nearest piece of paper, and proper witnessing if you're not notarizing is important also. Mm-hmm.
You know, and something, Beverly, first I want to say thank you for your work. I think that that's so great to put your, just make that mission and spread it out, especially in Craig and anywhere rural. It's hard to get access to these resources, and especially a facilitator that can help with the conversation, because it is a hard conversation. But something you said is to update and to tweak, and what is a barrier for people that I talk with is they just don't want to be committed to a decision they make today that may change in a few years. And it's really important that people understand that this document is current until there's a newly dated document. And so you can change your mind, you can tweak it, you can update it. And also what's intimidating is some of the sections. Somebody had mentioned before the psychotropic medications, and they just don't know how to answer it. They're not sure that they're ready to commit to a decision. And so again, what's important about this document is that you've chosen your person. Who is your voice? And there is a way to not do the other sections. And maybe you can speak more to that, but it's still a legal document if you just do the first section and sign it and get it legally notarized or witnessed. And then because you've had the conversation, the agent that you've selected will know how to answer those other middle sections on your behalf.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just your agent, but you also want to take these documents and give them to healthcare providers.
Absolutely.
And distribute them to perhaps other people in your circle that you want to know this information.
Yeah.
To speak on your behalf. It's critical to not put it in a safety deposit box or leave it with your attorney, etc. It's important to have this conversation, reviewing those values, identifying the agent, putting it into writing, then copying, distributing, and having more conversations with your circle.
And I think we have a caller that has a question related to that, so I'm going to go to Darlene in Cordova. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. Hi. Did that answer your question, or do you have...
Yeah, you did. I just kind of wanted to mention that it's really good to go over this information. And I recently had a stroke and realized that I could have been in this sort of situation and not had an advance directive. And so fortunately I've recovered and I was able to fill one out. So now that I do have one, and it's, but I don't know, so where to keep it, you know, copies. I see now it does mention this in the booklet, but it'd be good to go over, I guess.
Yeah.
Who needs the copies? And, you know, because during a crisis, you know, it's hard to remember where you put your papers.
Yeah, well, Julie, our lawyer here, wants to add some.
I love that question. Thank you for asking. That's a question we get a lot. And as far as generally, when someone comes to see me, I keep the original because I know we have a fireproof vault and, in our office, and we maybe I'm just a control freak, but I like to keep the original because I know that the copies are just as valid as the originals are. Sometimes I do let people take them, I promise. But the other people that I recommend they give them to are absolutely their healthcare providers. Depending on their situation, I might recommend they actually take them to the a facility that they think they may go to. If they live in the valley, I might say, you know, go check in and next time you're over at the Mat-Su Hospital and ask them if they can put this in their system. And I think all three of the hospitals in the Anchorage area anyway will put them in their system, even if you have not been a patient before. So they will create you a patient record, even if you haven't been there. But it's nice to have it on record because that cuts down on the time that Gigi mentioned earlier about finding the authority when the situation arises. So definitely take a copy. Don't put them just in your safety deposit box. Make sure that you've given one not only to the facilities but also to the authority that you've appointed, the agent that you're having. It's nice if they actually have a copy too.
And a dandy little trick that is available online as well is to simply write down on a business card and put it next to your driver's license. In the event of an emergency, my health care agent is, and how to reach them. And you put that right on your driver's license.
So you have it right there.
Right there.
Okay, we need to take another quick break as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. Alaska Pacific University offers a distinctive, personalized education grounded in hands-on, real-world experience that prepares graduates to be contributing members and leaders in their communities. This message is sponsored by APU.
Garrison Keillor, one of the most beloved radio hosts and acclaimed humorists, is coming to the Alaska State Fair with his America the Beautiful tour on Sunday, August 30th at 3 p.m. This 2.5-hour show will feature Prairie Home Companion classics with piano master Richard Dworsky, sound effects man Fred Newman, and other special guests. Tickets at alaskastatefair.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska State Fair.
You're listening to Talk of Alaska. I am Annie Feit, and we're talking advanced directives today. We have another caller, Brenda in King Cove. Hello. Welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you very much. I'm a social worker here with Eastern Aleutian Tribes in King Cove. I was raised by traditional grandmothers and my mother, and we talked a lot about how to care for yourself if something happened to you. And in our Aleut way, I think that was something that we knew and understood. But nowadays, due to religion, culture, family interactions, that's not something we can talk about very much. And our clinic has been trying to find a way to do this that's acceptable for our people, that's not judgmental of their thoughts and ways of people in the same family, and then not to feel like we're demeaning people who refuse to even listen or consider the documents. How do we go about a way that's acceptable to pull people or go into people's homes without insulting them? We want to do this a correct way, and I think it's really valuable. I've done it with lots of family members in the past.
Chris, do you want to address that?
Well, there's a couple of points. First, the palliative care team that's just getting started at Alaska Native Regional or Alaska Native Medical Center is creating some really culturally sensitive documents and process. And so that may be a resource for you that I can connect you to. Secondly, it is recognizing that people just simply don't want to talk about this, and that's okay. What we are suggesting, though, is that this is an important conversation, and when they are ready, there will be a time, because none of us get out of this life alive. There will be a time, and it's unfortunate, but the reality is if they don't want to talk about it, they don't want to talk about it.
And Brenda, do you have thoughts on that? I mean, with your work, have you...
Yes, with some of my family members, what we've done is pulled in someone they really respect and trust, an elder auntie, an elder cousin. Sometimes it's a younger person, someone they really trust and respect and have asked where they would like to meet at. That's one of the things that we have found overcome is where do they want to talk about it? Where do they want to meet at it? And in my family, we have so many people that... I have a large family. So many people who have had this need, some get very insulted. I've had people tear them up in the hospital room before people go into surgery, for goodness sakes. Mm. So be able to have this done beforehand.
Beforehand, absolutely. And
that came to me when I was thinking about this quite some time ago was we sit down with our young people as they grow, our young men to be men, our young women to be women, how to get married, take care of your children, how to protect yourself as men, and why don't we do that to protect ourselves for the end of life? I've seen people...
That's a really good point.
I'm Alaska Native, writhing in pain because they didn't take care of comfort measures and family refused. Mm. How do you go into your last walk of life trusting people will respect your wishes?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you so much for that, Brenda. And that accidents happen, and they happen to young people, and sometimes an entree into the conversation may be, do you remember your cousin who was in that four-wheeler accident, and he was laying in bed, and they put him on machines? Maybe we should have a conversation about this, because this can happen to anybody at any time.
And to piggyback on what Chris said, you know, we all have stories, and somebody has a situation that this really impacted those
end-of-life days, Brenda, and so to talk through the stories and how can we do it different.
And do you, when you guys go out and, thanks, Brenda, for your call, when you go out and do your work, do you see big differences in how people in different cultures deal with this issue? And can you talk about, do you have to adjust your approach?
Absolutely, I have to adjust my approach. And really, my approach is led by who I'm talking to. And so my probing question may be just, what are their thoughts? And then we go from there. There is no value statement to this form. The value comes from what the person decides to put on them. And that can be a variety of different things. And so that's what it just opens up. Again, going back to, it's not a right or wrong answer. It's your answer and being able to put that down on paper so that your voice can use it or your agent can use it.
And I'd like to say that to remember to someone who's intimidated by this form, the most important part of this form is to pick someone to speak for you when you are unable to speak for yourself. That is the number one thing that I think we'd all appreciate. And then having a conversation with that person over time changes. So if you don't feel comfortable at this moment filling out the rest about nutrition and hydration, or you choose to prolong life or not, if those are intimidating questions at this moment, then step back and think about someone you can appoint that and have those conversations with over time.
And we're coming to the end of the show here. I have about 5 pages of questions we didn't get to and callers and comments, but are there final things that you guys want to make sure you get across with this message, Gigi?
You know, I just want to acknowledge that, and I've heard this a couple times, this is a very difficult conversation. It's unavoidable. We all have an expiration date, and we will be left with our family and our friends and our loved ones speaking on our behalf. At the time this form is needed, it's too late for you to complete it. So it really is a plea to identify the agent, to have the conversation. If you need a facilitator, which I would encourage, or just to have somebody there to help guide that conversation, there are resources. I think Annie's going to put that on the website to really seek that out. And once you do it, you become a model and for the next person to just write it down.
Okay, and we don't have very much time, but do either of you have a parting comment?
I would simply like to add that this is about how to live well and to live every single day, and to have your affairs in order for the inevitable or unexpected.
Okay.
And I would just encourage everyone to start the conversation by, you know, be the leader. Look at this document, have a conversation with someone about being about making those decisions, and hopefully we can change cultural norms and talk about these important issues.
Okay, thank you so much. My guests, Chris Green, Gigi Rigg, and Julie Wrigley. Dave Waldron is our engineer. Josh Edge was on the phone and the phones, and I'm Annie Feit.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2015 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or learn more, go to SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. Alaska Pacific University offers an affordable education, small class sizes, and life-friendly schedules designed to support your personal and professional goals. APU is still accepting applications for fall 2015. Find out about financial aid and the Promise Tuition Grant and apply online at alaskapacific.edu before Saturday, August 1st. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.